Hey, everybody, before we get to this week's episode, we are nearing the end of Max Fun Drive, and we know this is a really tough time for all of us. We've been making all these sacrifices for the common good, and for some of us, the sacrifices are extraordinary. Thank you again to all the people who have been essential workers during this time. At its best, Max Fun Drive is a demonstration of what we can do when we come together, and that's worth celebrating right now. We wanted to take this opportunity to come together as a community of tens of thousands of people who rely on each other to make some magical stuff happen in the world.
So if you want to join Max Fun, if that is something you were able to do, it's actually pretty quick. It's pretty easy. You want to go to MaximumFun.org/join. You'll see the different levels and the thank you gifts that we can offer with each of them. You'll see all of like the different levels and the different thank you gifts that we offer with each of the levels. So you'll also get all of the great bonus content, which is like, it's a pretty big library because we've been doing this for a minute now. And that's just $5 a month. At $10 a month, you get to choose a really cool enamel pin from your favorite show. Pick me. You'll also have the option to purchase other stuff with proceeds from additional pins going to charity. And at $20 a month, you get the Max Fun custom game pack with Max Fun dice and a velvet bag. Ooh, saucy. With a rocket logo and a deck of custom Max Fun playing cards with podcast inspired designs. Check all that out and more at MaximumFun.org/join.
Tights and Fights Podcast. The perfect wrestling podcast. There's a guy named Hal, and there's Danielle, and this guy, Mike Eagle, is there as well. Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
This is the part of the show where normally myself or Hal sings a very fun song that we make about this podcast because we're narcissists. But since the only thing I want to do besides talk to our guest is make fun of Brandy, and I couldn't remember a song, we're just going to go ahead and skip it. Welcome to Tights and Fights, the show that discusses wrestling with the sincerity and hilarity that it deserves. I'm the one Dan Band, Danielle Radford. As we clearly see, I am lacking in all of my duties. We'll talk about why I am in the host chair a little later, other than you guys like it, so shut up. But for now, I am joined by my fellow members of the Nation of Conversation, Hal the Hammer Hallatine. What?
Hallentine?
Hallentine. Sure. Hal Loveland.
That's right. I still have a cast on my arm. Oh, that's Cowboy Bob. No, the shin guard. That's right. I have a shin guard. I'm going to use it. Anyway, whoop, whoop.
Oh, we got the legend Kelker, Lindsay Kelk. I haven't updated the board yet.
That's right.
Yeah, I haven't updated the board yet, but we'll get there. And our special guest, all the way from Ireland, it is YouTube Super I4 and I Patch Wolf, John Walsh. Thank you so much. It's so nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's really good to be here again. I know we've been trying to do this for a while.
Right. Since we had you on last, a lot has changed. Remember outside, John.
Oh boy, do I. You had your trees and your clouds and your kind of self of consistent identity. I liked that. That was my favorite part.
Oh, that was pretty good. Yeah. Remember when you could come to the U.S. and stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Before the world just put yellow tape around all of it because we're a crime scene. but since lots of things have changed in the world, lots of stuff has changed with wrestling, so we want to start with the important one. Hey, what's Ireland like since everything went...
So I think we're actually doing, like, okay right now. We're down to about 50 new cases a day. But the problem is,
oh,
it's like
you.
This weird...
Sorry.
That's a fair response. The problem is, it's kind of like this weird sort of limbo where things should be okay in theory, but what if they get worse? And so you're constantly doing the mental math to figure out, like, what you're able to do and what you're not able to do. And it's still, like... It still very much feels like living in a quarantine, and it's frustrating. Today is my first day in a while where I'm like, you know what? I think I'm probably going to give coffee a rest for a little bit. And I kind of feel like, you know that bit in Indiana Jones where the lad's face melts off because of the magic cup?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I feel like if you pause that halfway, that's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, we. You are looking at the only people in the U.S. who are taking the quarantine seriously, from what I have noticed. We are the only people who aren't taking pictures of ourselves at the beach, just kind of hanging out, getting real excited to go to a Disney. What? There was this crazy, I don't know if you saw it, this crazy commercial of a water park reopening, and all of the workers have masks on and are like, we're cleaning everything. And it's like, but you're still dunking yourselves in community fucking water. I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah, I saw, I was watching Extreme Rules on the WWE Network, and I saw, I think it was an Applebee's commercial. And there was, it was like this commercial of them like opening the door and like leading you in. And mm-hmm. at the end of it, it was like, Applebee's, good to have you back. And it's like, no, not yet, you fucking idiots.
And nobody loves Applebee's like I love Applebee's. Don't get me wrong, but come on. Does anyone need boneless wings that bad?
Welcome.
Do you need them
Applebee's.
That bad?
You'll never leave again. Soon you'll be dead. Enjoy traveling, businessman. You're the only ones here, you and that one family.
Speaking of Lindsay, we are well past due for another trash food date. That's how we do things here. Is me and Lindsay go on trash food Zoom dates? I also want to ask this because again, narcissists. Do you think the world is still going to want to play with us after this, or do you think we're just going to not have friends forever, John? By that, I mean the U.S.
I mean, not okay, me, yeah, because I was like, well, are we talking you guys specifically? Because you seem all right for them. You know, like, genuinely, I am very sad to be not doing cons in America. Very,
yeah,
you know,
season.
Disappointed in how... I don't want to get, like, too political, so I'll kind of, like, obscure the identity, but let's say, like...
I think you're
certain
fine.
Major political figures... No, like, I don't want to get controversial. Certain major political figures who have a lot of power are repeatedly making fucking asshats of themselves in every goddamn interview, and it's so nightmarish to watch. It's like it's more frustrating because it's like watching it, and like, you know, I have a lot of friends in America from, you know, doing online stuff, doing con stuff, doing podcasts like this, and it's like, you fucking asshole, would you take care of my friends, you know? So yeah, that's
there
frustrating.
There are charts, though, John. There are charts. How you can't argue with the charts.
You see, the thing is, I can't. Charts. Yeah, no, it's right. And the cool thing about charts is that if you like cover up the top couple of numbers and the bottom couple of numbers, you can basically just believe whatever you want.
A chart can be anything. We can be a chart right now. We're all different varying heights in our little boxes.
And look, if we turn the chart upside down, COVID is actually plummeting.
We're okay. We defeated it. We've traveled back in time and made sure it never existed.
Yeah.
Thanks, Grass.
You turn the frown upside down and the chart upside down and everything is fine.
Yep.
Just keep telling yourself that.
It definitely feels like someone just let the loudest person in the neighborhood drive the local, like, drive all the kids to preschool. And they don't know how to drive. They've never had a driver's license. They don't know what roads are. They've never heard of preschool. And kids are also new to them. So it's been real fun living here.
Yeah, back when the election happened in 2016, could you bleep that 2016? Because again, I don't want to get like too political here, and I don't want people to know exactly what I'm talking about. But back when the election happened in 2016, I was like, well, I guess how bad could it really get? Like, that was the one way I kind of comforted myself. And the answer turns out to be so much more like nightmarishly, horrifically worse than even the most cynical person could have imagined.
We shut down the world, you guys.
I heard that a lot at the time. Like, you know what? Realistically, not that much is going to change. I'd like to go back now and retroactively slap the taste out of all those people's mouths. Because, it's been a ride. It's been a wild ride. Yay,
yeah,
2020!
Right on our faces. Yay, we did it! So, on that note, of change. How much crowdless wrestling have you been able to watch? Because there's been quite a bit between like AEW, NXT, WWE, and then of course New Japan.
I've been keeping up with AEW, keeping up with WWE, not so much NXT for the last little while, but I've actually been, I've been watching a lot of old wrestling because I'm working on a new video right now about wrestling heels, and I actually ended up getting super into Stardom and a lot of Joshi stuff.
Oh my fucking god. Okay, I'm sorry. Who's your girl now? What are you into?
I only found out about her now, and she's retired last year, but this year, Kagetsu is the fucking supreme queen. I love her so much. Like, I never thought I could love a wrestler more than Asuka, but Kagetsu, oh my god, she is incredible.
We gotta get you looking at some Bull Nakano, my bud.
Bull Nakano's great. Yeah, I remember her from her WWE days when she used to just beat the shit out of Alundra Blaze for like 8 minutes.
Yeah! Yep. It was so good!
And Awesome Kong is amazing as well. I love that there's a wrestler out there whose gimmick is basically she seems like she ate Brock Lesnar and absorbed all his powers.
Oh, that's dope. Lindsay, so that was a great segue that I could have used to actually be smooth, but I'm fucking me, man. Let's clunk this shit up. So speaking of the ladies, Kelk, we got to talk about this fucking AEW female fan club.
No. Yeah, we do. I've talked about it.
Oh, wait.
I've talked
hold
about
on a second.
It on the internet.
Can I intro this? This is my one
yes,
bit of joy this
please
past
do.
Few months. No episode of Tights and Fights, a proper episode, is complete without our hottest weekly segment that everyone's talking about. It popped all the way up the charts. It started at number 2. Now it's number 1 with a bullet club. Mm-hmm. Get it? That's what that show's about. What's going on in the AEW women's division, Lindsay?
Well, Hal, they done fucked up.
Uh-oh.
That's what's going on. That's what's going on. Yeah, so, I mean, we'll start with my regular review of the match that I heard on Dynamite. There was one match. Mm-hmm. It lasted for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it was to progress a storyline with a wrestler who can't wrestle because she's injured. Mm-hmm. But that aside, Big Swole all day, all night, love her.
Yep, she's
big
God.
Shout
she's
out
fantastic.
To Rebel. Yep.
Everyone yeah, I was wondering if that was someone you got to see in your Stardom going yeah, back.
Like,
boy.
No shits on anyone involved in that match who are all doing all the best with yes. what they have. Amazing. But we really have to talk about AEW's general treatment of the ladies this week. Starting with, you know what? We're going to start with the tag team tournament because we got to, because it's all part of the same. It's all part of, it's
so
all
confused.
Meals on the same menu. That's the issue right. here, right? It's confusing. So at first they were like, we
in
can
the
do...
Applebee's of wrestling.
In the Applebee's of wrestling.
Welcome to the women's tag team tournament.
Yeah. Come on, ladies.
8
You're
teams
so
enter,
welcome.
No teams leave.
so they announced this tag team tournament. We were cautiously optimistic. I less so, because that's who I am now. Remember when I was like, you guys, you have to give them a chance. I'm the Tyra Banks gif. Like, I wanted this for you. I believed in you. I was rooting for you.
I was rooting for you. We
you
were
know,
all rooting
you know,
for
Lindsay,
you.
So they announced the tag team tournament. Yep.
Lindsay, the sweetest meal that I could have right now is 4 words long. But I'm going to save it.
Shut
because
up.
Let's wait and
Shut
see.
Up.
Yeah.
Shut up, Palantine.
Let's wait and see.
Shut up, Palantine. Shut up.
Have you ever heard the story of Cody Plagueis the Wise?
Nope. They announced a tag team tournament. I've got to get through this or I'm going to die. They announced it. It was, I was like, oh, this is curious that they're doing it this way with this, you know, wrestling is wrestling. But I'm like, oh, they're going to pull teams at random, but then not really. So I'm like, okay, that's weird. Why they wouldn't just like have people pick tag teams and work together. But cool, this is fine. I guess this is a way you get people to work together who wouldn't ordinarily work together. Let's just do this.
Yeah, that's
so
what
I'm excited
I
for it to happen.
I thought it was like, I thought it was just a way to like kick off a bunch of separate storylines because like, oh, this team actually gets on really well. This team fucking hates each other. Let's transition that into like a singles, you know, but no.
What a bit.
And that would make sense, wouldn't it, John? That would make sense, which is why it just couldn't work because the booking for the ladies on AEW doesn't make sense ever. And I was wrong to think it might. So they push this match, which is Nyla, Ariane Andrews, and Anna Jay, and
you can't even fucking get it out of your mouth.
Ty Conti. It looks like it's out.
It looks like it hurts. Those of you who obviously can't see, we're on Zoom. Lindsay Kelk looks like she is, looks like someone kicks her in the chest every time she has to say
that. My cat just came in to cry because he saw how upset that I was. So I mean, to smooth out the pain of seeing this announced, I did actually go back and watch some old Total Divas and got my Cameron kick, and I was fine. Felt better. I felt good. I saw some glitty.
How many babes were there?
Babes. I saw some Vinny. I saw some glitty, and I felt better. And then I was pumped to see Cameron, and I was really excited to see how she's improved. I know she's been training. I was really, really excited to see her wrestle. And I was not upset to see Tanara tie, I guess, now, wrestle. I was like, you know what? I thought she was someone when she came into the Mae Young had a ton of potential and never really got to explore that. And it seemed to me when she was in WWE, she was developing in the wrong direction. They were pushing her with a character, but never with her in-ring skill. As someone that came from a martial arts background, it seemed to me that she would be a natural to pick up those skills, but maybe she wasn't. I wasn't there. I didn't see every day. But then when I started watching the show, it's like, oh, there's a second match. Also, there is the Nightmare Sisters, and I'm like, oh, wait, I didn't know there was another match on this. So there's two matches, but you only really publicize one match. And then I just thought they really weren't publicizing it that much at all compared to their action figures. So the whole thing just felt very strange. And then they had Shul Guerrero come out and announce, which was massive. They had Medusa come out and make an amazing introduction, which was huge. And all I could think when the beginning was happening, all I could think was, why is this not on TV? You are giving it all this importance and all this significance, and you've brought in a legend, and you've got Shul Guerrero, and she was amazing, I will say, as a ring announcer.
Absolutely.
She was so powerful. Like, why is this not on TV if this is as important as you say it is?
Because part of me was like, okay, well, I actually like that it's on YouTube because I like the idea that if you're starting this huge thing and you want to be like, come in, come enjoy our women's division, yeah, man, put it on YouTube for everyone to enjoy. But like, why can't it both be on TV and then you put it on YouTube so people can be like, hey, if you missed it, here is this really cool thing. Go subscribe to wherever you got to subscribe to so that you can watch the rest of this.
But
on
we've
TV.
Also discussed a television show that gives you homework is not going to have a lot of students turn that homework in. If your job is to familiarize me, but like I am the target demo for this. I want to see a ton of women's wrestling, and they came out essentially now. I think we can say, and I'll let you finish, Lindsay. I apologize for cutting in, and I take no joy in the discomfort either of you have. I just think it's like we all got worked. We all got worked.
Not joy, just mild pleasure.
Cody Rhodes out there essentially trying to virtue signal. Like what he like, we're going to be this and that, and then not following through on that is so hurtful.
AEW is for everyone as long as you're prepared to go look for the thing that you need on YouTube, even though it's not even on a regularly scheduled night, and you've got $50 in your pocket.
I'm going to start
AEW
a rumor.
AEW is for everyone.
I just heard this. I just heard a rumor that AEW stands for All Except Women. Is that true? Can anybody verify that for me?
Look, Hal, don't be stupid. We've got our own YouTube show. What is wrong with you?
I forgot.
How dare you expect to be seen on television like everyone else?
It's AEW's second channel that they push at the end of their videos. Don't forget to subscribe to our second channel, AEW After Dark.
It kind of breaks my heart because like I remember when do you remember how like hyped everyone was for like the Riho versus Nyla Rose matches? Like they were some of my favorite matches of AEW at that time. And now you're looking at it, and like no disrespect to Sakurai, she seems cool, but like, there's even if you like her as a wrestler, there's nothing really to like cling on to or get invested in. It nearly feels like having a women's division for the sake of it, and it feels like such a waste because
it's exactly
talent,
what it feels
you know?
Like.
Ton of talent.
Yeah, and Sheeta is an amazing wrestler. I love Sheeta. I think when she's in the ring, she's so good. I think she can tell a story with her match. Whoever she's wrestling or whyever she's wrestling them, but they're giving her nothing to work with. That match with Penelope Ford was so great. They made it so important in no time at all. Just that match before it that she had with Red Velvet, which lasted like, 2 minutes? Mm. And the way that she came out and kicked Penelope Ford's ass after the match, because Penelope slapped her pre-match and then Sheeta went after her.
Even seeing like Abaddon on Dark is like, what are you doing, you know? Uh-huh. It's like, people, this is the kind of character that, like, okay, not right now, bad example, that kids go into school the next day and talk about, you know? Like, that's what... And
yes.
Yeah.
Where is their story? Where is their plan? It's not in the tag team. The one thing I do want to give them credit for was they did... It seems like they did know what to do with Ty Conti, because you just have her come out and kick people a bunch because she's real good at it. And if you don't ask her to do that much wrestling, but you just let her kick the shit out of people, she looked great. I thought they giving her that massive offense against Nyla made her look really strong, made her look legit. And I thought that was good. I wouldn't have her lean into, we're the prettiest wrestlers, because I'm like, hey, 2020. But cool, like, that's your thing right now. We can move from that. We can work with this. It just made me so sad. And then I waited for the show on Wednesday and I thought, well, maybe they'll show a highlights package. And I saw lots of people defending it online saying, like, well, you can't have the whole tournament on the show. I'm like, why? There's only like eight matches. Like, why can I not have the whole tournament on the show?
Why? They had the whole fucking tag team tournament on it. Ooh, man.
I know. And next week's tag team appreciation week. So I'm like, holy shit, you guys. But no, I'm like, oh, they didn't even do a recap. It got a graphic running along the bottom of the screen during a match like Dark. They didn't talk about it. They didn't show a package. And this is just what happened with the wrestles this week. Now we get to talk about the heels bullshit. I'll try and keep this brief. Anyone have any feelings they'd like to throw in about exploitation being marketed
this
as inclusion?
This story is like, it's the same feeling as like falling down a stairs where it's just, you start at the top and you're like, oh, and then it's like, ow, oh, no.
Yeah, every step gets worse.
It's rakes
and at the
all
bottom
over.
Of the
just
stairs,
stepping on
it's
rakes
just,
right to the face.
Yeah, it's rakes and cacti and needles and burning coals and then for some reason brandy. And I don't know why she pushed me down the stairs. We're all ladies. I thought we were going to go down the stairs together. But no.
I love brandy.
I
like, I think she's great.
Aghast. I think brandy is a committed marketer. Is
oh, really?
What I think brandy is.
Mm-hmm. I can see
this
that.
Is genius. So taking myself out of this as a wrestling fan, I'm looking at this from a marketing perspective. If I were a marketing person, wrestling is a business, okay? Ultimately, wrestlers are performers and artists and also businessmen in their own rights. Wrestling companies are businesses. They are there to make money. They are there to make money out of us. We know this. It's a honest transaction. We are the viewers. We pay to watch this. That's the deal. The other part of it is they want to squeeze every penny out. So they want me to buy their t-shirts. They want me to buy their tickets. They want me to listen to their podcast. They want me to spend my money with them. That's the whole plan. Nothing about that is hidden. Nothing about that is dishonest or deceitful or exploitative. It is what it is. What is exploitative about heels is they looked at their demographic. They looked for a space that was being underserved and not being treated well and possibly didn't feel great. They thought, how can we serve that audience? And then how can we charge them for it? And that is why it's fucked up. You played into women wrestling fans and not even just women. That's another bigger part of this. It's like, it's not just women, binary women that like feel excluded from wrestling. It's a bigger problem. So you've already made it an issue by just saying, this is for women. But to say, hey, we know you don't feel welcome here, and we know this community is sometimes difficult for you, and we would like to change that. We, the most progressive wrestling organization, which is what we've called ourselves, we would like to change it and make you feel welcome and give you a safe space where you can enjoy your fandom and be you and not have to worry about getting called all the names that Danielle and I have been called frequently online. You know, you can just have a nice, safe space. But, by the way, it's going to cost you $49 a year. That is some bullshit. And I cannot see anywhere along the line where it seemed like a good idea. Like, I cannot.
What
I
exactly? What does that get you exactly, the $49?
You get Zoom calls and you get potential meet and greets. And that's about it.
You know, I have a degree in marketing and I've worked in marketing for close to 15 years. So I've been around and experienced marketing for 25. And I can tell you that this makes zero sense to try to just, they're just trying to make money off of a promise that they've never fulfilled. They came out, said, this is going to be different, and highlighted all the ways. They're like, every company after the murder of George Floyd that was like, diversity is important, and then hired 20 white dudes to come work at their company. It is, there's no, absolutely no difference to me. And as a wrestling fan, to like, I look back, as I'm sure many of us have, many times over the years that we've been alive, and look back and gone, how could I have been so fucking stupid that somebody gave me a glimmer of hope for something that I wanted and have been begging for on a national American stage, specifically in wrestling. Like, there, I know that there are promotions around the country. I know that, that Japan, there are a lot of places where this is done way better than here, but it has never been done nationally on a nationally weekly broadcast television program that has put the importance and the equality or equity to the to women's wrestling that men's wrestling has enjoyed for as long as pro wrestling has been about. And so when that promise is made and you see it, some, well, they were in WWE, they experienced that that shitty culture there, and they are, you know, Cody and Brandy are a couple, and she, they seem to be in equal standing, and it's going to be different this time. Like, ha- like, shame on all of
she
us.
She taught him that black people are black.
We're always getting worked. Just assume we're always getting worked, and they'll say whatever they can to get you in the door and watching television, and that is as far as it'll go. That's why you have Jim Ross coming back. That's why you have the four, like, Cody is recreating Mid-South, and if that's what he wants to do, that's fine. If he wants to bring back Eric Bischoff, which surprisingly was not as bad a segment as I thought it would be. Like, he was fine. He was fine, but it didn't need to be him. It didn't need to be.
But all it did was reinforce what you've just said and reinforce what they've been doing since the beginning. And that's, I've talked about this a thousand times. I know everyone's sick of hearing me saying it. I'm sick of hearing me saying it. The reason I am so disappointed in AEW and why it makes it really hard for me to enjoy the bits that are good, because the bits that are good are so good. But what makes it so hard is every week, every week I watch it and I am so sad because I'm watching something, I was promised something and then I'm watching something else. And if you had said from the beginning, you know what, this is wrestling going back to basics, this is wrestling going back to what I know it can be, this is my heritage, this is what my dad did, this is what I've wanted, this is what's been missing, that we're going to bring it back and it's going to be the best it can be, I would have said, ooh, that's going to be interesting. And it would have been fine and I would have been through the door and I would have watched it. But the fact that they stood up there and said, this is for everyone, this is going to be inclusive, this is going to be all colors, all genders, all sexualities, everything. It's going to be something you've never seen before. It's going to be for everyone. And it isn't. They don't like the criticism. They don't like the feedback. And you cannot be the public-facing figure and runner of a company and not face criticism from your audience. If you put out a statement and your statement is then deemed to be untrue, like certain people who did terrible interviews this week with charts, you need to be held accountable.
Ooh, that is too much fire. I'm going to let Kelp go ahead and drop the metaphorical motherfucking mic on that as we get ready to go into our next segment. We're going to take a break here really quick. If you have anything to say about what we discussed so far, the conversation does continue on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and our Discord. I mean, you can add us, man. That's fine. I know we're going to, it depends on what you say, dude.
I mean, I just said you've got to be able to take the tweet. So, like,
yeah,
I expect the tweets.
No, we can
bring me
it.
The tweets.
I expect the tweets. I'm just saying, there's a, we'll see if I respond back. What I definitely won't do is respond back like a dumbass. That is the Tights and Fights guarantee. And when we come back, we will talk about something that is for everyone. The Saga of the Golden Lovers, up next on Tights and Fights. All right, so we've been doing, like, for Max Fun Drive, we did a we did a live show where we chatted through Money Play, and it was really fun. Like, we got to hang out with our listeners, which is always really, really fun for me. That is one thing, especially right now, that I'm missing, is when we would get a chance to do meetups before shows, do meetups around town. So that's something that bummed me out, and that I'm really glad that we got that opportunity to do during the drive. We got to, like, sing happy birthday to people. We were all in there making jokes. We saw someone who might have been a secret Lawrence brother. Well, no. But that's why we like hanging out with you guys.
We're so lucky to have this podcast right now as an outlet during this insane time to get to see other human beings who do not live in our home once a week. And not only that, but to connect with you and make you feel less alone, I hope. And Max Fun Drive is all about celebrating that community and supporting artists whose work you enjoy if you are able to do so. That we need technology. Mm-hmm. It takes time and it takes funding to produce episodes like this. This is a network-produced show, so it's even more important that your support is shown during this time. And I'll tell you what we're going to do. You can join for as little as $5 a month. You can go 10, you can go 20. They're great gifts for all that. But at the $20 level, everybody who either upgrades to or joins at the $20 level, we will give you your own custom name and we'll read it to you in a video. I'll tell you what else. If we reach, before the end of this drive, 500 new and upgrading members who support Tights and Fights specifically, and we will tell you how to do that, how to make sure your support goes to Tights and Fights, I will take a picture in a Ric Flair robe wearing a luchador mask. You might ask yourself, do I even want that? The answer is yes. And you never knew how much until you see it. And the only way to see it is for us to hit 500 new and upgrading members.
I know, normally I would just slap Hal around, but it's the Rona, so he gets out of it this year.
And this will be great because it'll actually be a professional headshot and Hal might use it to get a job one day.
Oh, for sure. That's why Hollywood has been knocking down my door, because I haven't been dressed in a robe with a luchador mask. So here's what you do. Go to MaximumFun.org/join. You set up your recurring monthly contribution, or you upgrade your existing monthly contribution if you are able. You'll enter credit card information. Super easy. It takes about a minute. But the most important part, the way to make sure that Tights and Fights directly benefits from your contribution, is when they ask you what shows you listen to on the network, the shows that you select and select as many as you listen to, those are the ones that benefit directly from your contribution. That is the only way. Otherwise, it goes into some slush fund that I assume Julian will just use to buy more weight sets. And he doesn't need – he's swole enough. I'm beginning to get concerned about it.
It's protein powder. Thank you very much.
So get his Megamax protein powder in a drum so big that only Julian – can lift it. And that's a philosophical question that we have wrestled with for ages, finally answered for you. So thank you for your support to everybody who has joined and everybody who has upgraded during Max Fun Drive. We are so appreciative to you. And those of you who weren't able to, but still spread the word and gave us reviews on Apple Podcasts. Absolutely. There are so many different ways to get involved that didn't involve finances. And so many of you did that. And we cannot thank you enough. You are the best.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. We know that it's like, obviously it is a struggle out there right now. So man, we get it if you don't have money to be able to join us. But when you do hit us up on Apple Podcasts, when you do share the word about the podcast with your friends, hanging out in the Facebook or talking to us on Twitter, all of those things really do help us. And they are good ways that you can spread the word of the Tights and Fights. If you want to still be able to help, but money is just not a way that you can do it, those are absolutely awesome. And we thank you for those too, sincerely.
And now, return to the show. Julian, make it happen.
Hey, it's for me.
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Hal Lovelin, and I'm joined today by
Danielle Radford.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Danielle Radford. I'm joined today by
Hal Lovelin.
Lindsay Galk.
And John Super Eyepatch Wolf. I always feel weird saying the tag along with my name.
Oh, I love it. I think it's great. He gets all blushy.
If I ever thought that like my channel was actually going to have taken off, I probably would have taken a moment and picked a slightly less cringy name instead of something that makes everyone think you're a furry Nazi.
Oh, well, it's the least furriest Nazi Irishman on this podcast, so we're good. This week we are going to give one corner of the wrestling world some extra attention. This is our main event.
Let's get ready to rock. Whoa! Oh!
So this was one of the longest running sagas across international wrestling. The fight, the union, the separation, the reunion, the second separation of Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, the Golden Lovers. So, John, your first wrestling video from a few years ago was all about the Golden Lovers, or not all about it, but it was a lot about the
Golden
Lovers.
The last 10 minutes was entirely Golden Lovers, so yeah.
Yeah, it was dope.
Thank you.
And you seem to be really passionate about it, so we want to hear all about your feelings about this particular story.
Oh man, that's we could go on a little bit on this one, honestly. But
it started one day
when I was in LA. I was doing the Crunchyroll Awards Anime Expo, the Crunchyroll Awards, where we gave out like awards to different anime and stuff. And I was like, kind of, I was there for like 48 hours, and like going from Ireland to LA to 48 hours is a trip, let me tell you. And I was there like kind of just alone in my hotel room, and I was kind of browsing through Twitter, and I got a notification from this one person, and I can't remember who it was. And so if in the off chance you're hearing this, I'm so sorry, but they basically said, man, I'd love to hear Eyepatch Wolf narrate the full Golden Lovers saga. I ended up reading this really long Twitter thread. I think it's the Twitter thread on Golden Lovers from, I think her username is Simpsons Reference on Twitter.
I think so, yeah. It's a great thread. It's a great
reference. Really great.
Both of Simpsons and of Golden Lovers.
I remember just like literally just being alone in my hotel room, and by the end of it, like crying, like actually in tears from what this whole thing was. And then I started like researching it, and like it really, to be honest with you, I think it really renewed my interest in wrestling in a big way, because like I hadn't watched New Japan before that, and then I started watching New Japan, and I was like, oh my god, like to me this is like a better version of the thing I've loved for my entire life, you know. And I couldn't believe it, and like I just completely like fell in love with Kenny and with Ibushi, and just like their story was so sad and was so great. Ibushi might have awakened some latent bisexuality in me that I was not aware was there, which is a really weird thing to figure out in your, you know, late 20s. It's a really beautiful story, and like it captures a lot of what a relationship can be in wrestling, especially when it's more than just like, well, no, I'm going to beat you for the title, you know.
Well, no, it is my turn for titles. Yep. Lindsay, you're also, we obviously huge fan of the beautiful fairy prince Kota Ibushi.
My elven prince. He's an elven prince. Get it right,
Daniel. Elven prince. Sorry, I apologize.
Elvish. They're beautiful.
Kota Ibushi and Kenny Omega, as both again individually and as the tag team. What is your history with Golden Lovers?
I wish I had one. It's similar to John in that I didn't really know much about either of them. And then I saw Kenny at PWG back when it was in Reseda. Yeah. Gosh, was I even living in LA? I may have just been visiting. I can't remember. It was a while back. And I loved him immediately. I just fell in love with his performance. He was so fun. Yeah. And obviously the energy in the room when he came out, because it was a surprise. And everyone was like, oh my God, Kenny Omega! I'm like, oh, this is exciting. I don't really know much about this guy, because I really wasn't watching Japan. And then I saw Kota Ibushi in the Cruiserweight Challenge in WWE, and he also was on a bunch of live shows. And I saw him here in LA at an NXT live show, I believe it was. Was it the one at the Palladium? I think it was the one at the Palladium a few years ago. And I was so excited to see him live. Mm. Like, I cannot tell you. Like, now husband there, but for the grace of God. Like, he was very concerned. He was like, could you calm down? I'm like, no, you don't understand. It's Kota Ibushi. And my brother had talked to him out a bunch, because my brother knows better than me about literally all the things. And he was like, oh, he's amazing. Like, if only he didn't have Justin Bieber hair. So I knew which one he was, because I'm like, he has Justin Bieber hair. And I'm like, I'm fine with it.
He did have floppity hair, yeah.
It's adorable. He's an elven prince. That's how you have your hair. And well. I just, from seeing them individually, I loved their work. This is something Danielle used to talk about on the podcast. Like, before I was on the podcast, you would always talk about how AJ Styles was like a beautiful gazelle, and how he could move and manipulate his body. And
yeah, we've calmed down on gazelle talk.
We've moved down. But it was the way that they could move and manipulate their bodies was unlike anything else I had seen in current wrestling, and I just wanted to watch everything they did, and that got me going back into their back catalogue, because then my brother was like, well, you should watch this, because this is what they've done together. And then that was it. I was into it. And then I remember the moment I fell in love with Danielle, which is also tied to the Golden Lovers, was when one of my early episodes on the pod, and we were discussing when Kota came into the ring to protect Kenny. Oh. And you narrated that for us against some very lovely romantic soap opera music. And I believe the moment was when Kenny tried to push him away and Kota went to turn, but then came back. And to quote you directly, "Not my baby," is what you said, is how Kota felt. "No, not my baby." And he wrapped his arms around him, and Kenny surrendered in that epic sobbing hug where they just surrendered to each other and surrendered to their love and their fate and their destiny and what was meant to be. And they were reunited. And listeners, it felt so good. And I don't want to live in a world that doesn't have the Golden Lovers in it. That's all I know. And now I'd sound like a mad teenager with a crazy crush. It is true.
No, you sound like a professional fucking romance writer is what you sound like, by the way. You sound like maybe you actually know what you're talking about all the stuff, because it is the thing that you do for money and not watch wrestling, weirdly enough. So on the opposite of this, there is Howl. Howl? There is
Howl. Howling team. You're Howling team now. Howling team love.
Look, I don't get invited to junk food Zooms. The least you could do is remember my fucking name.
You're busy.
I'm not going to fuck with your diet for the Cheesecake Factory, Hal.
Also that, yeah.
Hal, we'll do our own junk food soon.
Thank you, John. You and I'll hang out. I just need friends.
We've invited you to junk food Zoom, by the way, and you were like, no, I'm too busy doing one of my like 80 other podcasts that are really popular. But we've said... Come,
that's not.
Come
we're not airing this dirty
us.
Laundry here in front of all these people. In front of John.
John, come do this in front of John.
Do this in front of the children.
But no, so on the opposite spectrum of this, Hal, you are probably the least familiar with Kota and Kenny's work on the international scene, which is why I am doing a bang-up fucking job of hosting. So what did you think as you've gone back and watched some of the key points in this story?
Well, first of all, I think they're both massively talented wrestlers. That's completely undeniable. And I'm a sucker for long-term storytelling. And even if they didn't start out 10 years before and say this is where we're going, the idea of writing and storytelling over time that has a memory of the things that happened before is great.
Yeah,
that's
one thing I kind of get with some like non-wrestling fans, because like a lot of non-wrestling fans watch my videos. Like I've had people kind of say to me, like with the Undertaker or with the Golden Lovers, yeah, but no one planned this out, like no one wrote this from the start, it just kind of happened. And like they say that like a criticism, but to me it's like, yeah, that's the fucking point, you know? Because like I think the fact that stories can evolve like this is one of the coolest things about wrestling.
Agreed. The organicness of it is so beautiful. And the way that they told that story, like in your video, how you point out them using each other's moves at pivotal moments in their matches, it's not even explicitly stated. It's not even said in... It might be mentioned on commentary. It might not. It's not spoken in backstage segments. It's not said into a mic. It is we're shown. And it's so beautiful when you can show us. I mean, as Daniel mentioned, I am a writer. Show, don't tell. And they show that story. And it's so beautifully
and
done.
Like, I think
it's crazy.
It's so rare to see wrestling storylines done that good, but like when you do see, you know, an event in wrestling that can wordlessly convey such a powerful emotion like that, like the most recent one for me, I don't know if you guys saw it, was the Minoru Suzuki bearing to Jushin Thunder Liger.
Yeah. Oh.
I tears. I could
Jushin's
not handle
retirement
that.
Ceremony was just too much. It was a lot.
Give that man his flowers.
Yeah.
He got so many flowers. He got flowers and his kid was there and it was fine. So it was like, but yeah, that was a lot. That and it's not COVID friendly if you're emotional. So if your emotions are on a roller coaster, like don't do it.
You know, we all suspend our disbelief when we watch anything that has any amount of fiction in it. And for wrestling, it's a special kind of suspension of disbelief where you have to believe, yes, this garbage man is now a wrestler or this guy who wears a mask was burned.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yes.
You're talking about the great Duke the Dumpster Drody. Was that his
Drozy.
Name?
Duke the Dumpster Drosy.
Yeah, I recently, I'm working on a section of my new video called The Hall of Terrible Heels. Yes. I only recently learned that Duke the Dumpster Drosy's natural enemy was an angry plumber called T.L. Hopper. Hopper. Thank you for, you just saved me like thousands of YouTube comments. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're welcome.
And he would come out to just fart noises.
Yeah.
Y'all gotta stop saying shit while I'm trying to take a drink of my fizzy water.
Which should have been Bastion Booger's
entrance. Mama's trying to hydrate her throat.
Okay, sorry, I'll get this section back on track. So the saga of TJ Hopper and Duke the Drumster Drosy was one of wrestling's best, honestly.
Yeah. But what I was going to all of it to say that no matter how much we suspend our disbelief, if there's no logic to what we're watching internally, if you can spot the things that make no, well, that person 6 months ago was doing this and this is a complete 180 and nobody's explained why. Everything that takes you further away. And the job of wrestling or any fiction is to pull you in and pull you in and pull you in until you're in this virtual reality world where everything makes sense that's happening in front of you because it follows its own logic. So doing that over the course of 10 years is, that's just great creative work.
And even like when they were in separate promotions, the way they'd use the motif of like the one wing was so good. And then, oh, yeah, exactly. And, you know, Kenny then like the skeleton wing because like he was in Bullet Club. Oh, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, so good. We're going to get into this. So Kenny really started getting attention as a trash talking up and comer who left WWE developmental as fucking so many people do, because he wanted to make a name on the Japanese stage. Meanwhile, Elvish Prince Kota was one of the most gifted wrestlers in the world, known for his smooth and brutal in-ring style. As Lindsay Kelk said, he is a gazelle. That's right, we're taking it back. We have another gazelle on the podcast, and this one does not believe in flat earth science. He's also been a brutal...
It's because he's an Elvish prince. He knows what's really going on.
I'm just saying there's a point to it. Fucking AJ, stop.
he's been all over this Middle Earth, this round-ass Middle Earth. So Kenny took notice of Kota and decided to call out Kota in a delightfully awkward parking lot promo, which all parking lot promos are awkward.
Ibushi, where are you? Ah, there you are. Get over here. DDT, August 6th. I come to meet you, Ibushi. Best out of three falls. One pin in ring, second pin off ring. Ibushi, do you really think you can beat me in an off ring match?
I mean, he basically slid into his DMs. I mean...
He did! He slid into his parking lot DMs.
The great thing about this video is that it's a nice reminder of what the world was like before we all had iPhones. And it's, just get the digital camera and just, like, trying to make it work. And, yeah, it's amazing.
Ah, oh, so good. All right, so then they do end up having a great match, which Kota wins. And normally, this would lead to, like, a big multi-match rivalry between them. Instead, they decided to get together, form a tag team called the Golden Lovers. They go on to win tag titles, the love of Japanese fans, and the love of each other. So what did everyone think of this first, like, the first honeymoon period before these two, before the real world made everything stupid?
I think it's impossible to just watch them in the ring together and not believe there's such a strong connection there. Like, that's what always stuck me about their matches. They just, I said something real similar in the video, but, like, there's a synchronicity where they're so weirdly in tune with them, and I think for that, like, just in how they perform their double moves and how, like, they perform moves at the same time, and for that to be, like, the driving way their relationship was conveyed, like, it was just beautiful. Like,
yeah, if we were talking about this from a... Let's draw some parallels, and only because of my profession, but if we were talking about this from a romance storyline perspective, you would... talk about this with their chemistry is insane. Yeah. Like, they are off the charts with how in sync they are and how well they are able to practically read each other's minds. And it's just beautiful to watch. Wrestling is very often fun and it's impressive and it's physical feats that you're like, wow, look at that. but it's not always beautiful. Mm. And a lot of what they do is just, it's like ballet. It's insane at how gorgeous it is to watch. And like we say, just wordless connection between the two of them that was breathtaking when you watch those early matches.
Yeah, for me, absolutely, that is one of the things that stands out. Because, and there are people who don't think wrestling should be necessarily beautiful and gorgeous, but we don't care about them at all. But for me, that is, that completely is one of those things that stands out, because I like my wrestling beautiful. I like the brutality, don't get me wrong. Give me as many dudes lifting as many fucking ambulances as you want to give me. I will pop hard for that shit. You give it to me.
It's a spectrum, right? Like the beautiful parts make the brutal parts brutal, and the brutal parts make the beautiful parts beautiful. Like there's a rhythm to it, because like those matches could be fucking brutal as well, but like I think that was kind of the fascination with them, like how they balanced those two ends of it.
And
sometimes they did kissing, so that was
from the romance side of it, that was so cute.
Mm-hmm.
As someone who's watched a lot of romantic comedy and romance stories and enjoys them a great deal, and Lindsay maybe back me up or tell me if I'm wrong, the more a couple seems like they should be together, the more hurt you are when they eventually, you have to set up the hurdle that gets in the way, or them either breaking up or almost breaking up. The only way you're going to care about that is if you think they should be together. And with two single stars coming together to form a team, the goal is always eventually they're going to break up. They're going to wrestle one another. And however, like that's the tale's oldest time. So how do you do something new with it? And the only way to make you care when they break up is for them to appear like they were destined to always be together.
Yeah. And that's how you get that angst, baby. Oh man. I just had an evil thought. There was a second where me and Lindsay, I'm still kind of doing it, we're just going ham looking up Slash Fiction AO3. I don't recommend it, by the way. Don't do it. But I am going to do it after we're done with this. I just want to see what the children are writing. But because, as Hal says, you have to have that push and pull. You have to have that angst. That is how good storytelling works. Nothing could last forever. Coda ends up doing some of his best work as a single star, even as they continue to tag. And then Kenny winds up feeling left behind. They wrestle once more in 2012 at the behest of the company, not out of any like fever pitch rivalry. And once again, this time, fucking crying. Kota winds up beating Kenny Omega, his tag partner.
I love this match. Like I've seen people call it a spot fest, and I feel like you really have to ignore everything surrounding that match to consider it a spot fest. Like and like to me, like the whole story there, like the reason it worked is because like Kota, like at that point, even though, like, you know, he still hasn't quite got there, you could see a direct line between Kota and the very peak of Japanese wrestling. You know, he had everything you could possibly imagine. And the separation between him and Kenny, like, it felt real. Like, it felt Kenny was, like, the second guy in Golden Lovers. And the reason I love that match is because, like, you watch Kenny and Kota absolutely beat the shit out of each other. But it's Kenny trying not to be left behind, and it's Kota.
Yeah.
It's Kota just fighting because he loves wrestling so much, and it's so sad.
And he has too much pride in what he does to like. He to has to win the it. Match.
He's
not gonna. And also, one of the ways I also saw it, but this is also like sometimes I think my head canon is a real canon. He also has too much respect for Kenny to throw the match.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
He has way too much respect. At least, like that was what I first saw. That was like, oh yeah, he's not gonna throw the match. A, because he has too much pride in what he does. I don't think that it would be possible for him to do so. And B, because Kenny wouldn't fucking want that. Like Kenny would want to fight him at the height of his powers.
Yeah, they want to be equals.
To
Hal's point, in storylines where you have two characters, I'm taking the romance out, but the characters who are destined to be together or have chemistry like that, you have to throw realistic obstacles in their way. So like on TV, like with a Ross and Rachel, it's like, oh, Ross and Rachel, will they, won't they, will they be together? We know they will be together, but it's like, why do we keep them apart for the duration of this storyline? And I would argue that Kenny and Kota have achieved it with much more success than Ross and Rachel. But the thing is, you have to have obstacles in their way that you can believe in, otherwise it feels forced. And the fact that what was keeping them apart, or what was driving them apart at this point, wasn't keeping them apart, this is what pushed them apart in the first place, was the fact that they were both so fucking good. It's like that made it so appealing to us as viewers, because they weren't pulled apart because one person wanted to run off with another person, or one person had joined another faction, or the other person, not even especially the jealousy. Like, obviously we saw Kenny sort of being falling behind, but he wasn't jealous of Kota. He wanted to be as good as Kota. Yeah. It just really felt like they both just wanted to be brilliant, and their brilliance is what drove them apart. So when they had to have that match, it just feels brutal that either of them should have to lose.
How much more powerful is that than, like, and then Kenny, he hits Kota Ibushi across the back of the head with a, you know? And, like, that's, and like, a lot of people...
And there's fucking blood everywhere!
And a lot of people come to me and they kind of say, like, and I'm not sure what your guys' opinion on this, but, like, you know, the Gargano-Ciampa rivalry? Mm-hmm. And I like it, but it's exactly what I feel like we're talking about Golden Lovers wasn't, in that just, like, one of them turned on each other and that was the story. You know what I mean?
It's the difference between organic and forced storytelling. Mm-hmm. Like, the Gargano Ciampa was very clearly written storytelling. And I'm not saying they weren't involved in it, and I'm not saying they didn't pull it off very well, but you could see that written down. You could see the script of it, you know? The Kenny Kota was organic, and it makes all the difference. And that's it. It's not that they aren't good. I love Ciampa Gargano. I love the storyline. I hated that last match, but, you know, I loved the idea of it. But it you've taken something that naturally occurred over 10 years between two men who had a natural chemistry and connection and admiration for each other's work, and forced it into a 3-year written, plagued by injuries storytelling to fit TV. And it's not the same thing. It's not bad. It's just not the same thing.
Mm-mm. So we're going to fast forward a little bit. So now, again, Kenny is tired of losing. He decides he is going to join up with the baddest group in wrestling, the Bullet Club. And yeah, he does kind of sort of inadvertently kind of sort of maybe kind of oopsie cost Kota the IWGP title. But as the eventual leader of the Bullet Club, he finally gets what he's been wanting. He finally gets to win the stuff that he's been looking for. He even won the G1 Climax 26, which is huge. So this is like cleaner peak Kenny Omega. What are your thoughts on these, John?
This is my favorite work Kenny has ever done. I think the match you're talking about, where Kota Ibushi was fighting AJ Styles for the, I think, was it for the World Championship, the IWGP World Championship? I think it was. But of all the interferences in wrestling, that interference from Kenny costing Kota Ibushi the title, that is the most brutal one I have ever seen, and they don't even lay hands on each other.
Just a longing look. Just a longing look.
And that, like, it just causes a moment of hesitation in Kota, and it's brutal. And, like, even the face of Kenny after that match, when he knows what he's done, is so convincing. At that point, you kind of feel like with Kenny, he either has to move forward and just fully embrace what he's become, or he has to just, like, acknowledge, like, the awful shit he's done to the person he loves. And, of course, he has to push forward. He has to become one of the biggest heels in wrestling, because the alternative is, you know, taking responsibility for destroying Kota's dreams. And fuck, that's some good storytelling, you know?
That is some good story. Hal, what did you think about that the first time you saw the match?
I just love... They're both such good performers that they pull off the story. And you can have that kind of memory and logic, but if you don't have the right performers, it won't come off properly. And they're it's not only the right type of story to tell, but it's the right two people to tell it with.
100%.
Yep.
I think it's testament to their skill as well, in that it is very often wordless, and that's why it works so well. And a lot of that is, obviously, there's a language barrier for some fans. We know Kenny speaks Japanese, but the fact that Kenny is a native English speaker and Kota obviously speaks Japanese, that there is an element of a language barrier that makes it all the more romantic, you know? It's like language, words are not a barrier for these guys. Words are not a boundary. They have crossed that boundary. They communicate in glances. They communicate in physical action. They communicate in silent chemistry. And that translates so much better than a lot of promos. Like, a lot of promos Yeah. That's when the cracks show, because a lot of wrestlers aren't actors, and you can have the best wrestler in the world be a not great promo, and suddenly you've lost that suspension of disbelief. Even if you've lost a tiny percentage of it, it hurts the story, because you're like, oh, they're great until they speak, you know, and then you're like, oh, I'm not as invested as I was. With these two, you didn't need words because you saw everything. And that, like, that look on the apron, Kenny's face when he's walking around the ring clapping for AJ, but with his head ducked and his, like, looks broken. Shoot it into my veins.
That's one of the reasons why I get so frustrated. But there was, like, that moment where it felt like, okay, well, what are we doing with the Japanese wrestlers? Because you guys are collecting all of the figures from the store, but you're not fucking using them. You're keeping them in the box. And I know that so much of that was, like, that fear of the language barrier. But it's, like, literally, like, look, I love a good fucking promo. We all love a good promo. But the idea of wrestling is to tell stories with your bodies. So why
no, it isn't, Danielle. No, it isn't. You need to sit down and talk to Road Dogg and have him explain to you why he's going to improve NXT, because it needs more storytelling and it needs more chats. He says it needs more chats.
We need one more promo of Rikishi explaining why he ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, you know what? Just he did more. It for The Rock. I don't know if he made that clear.
Okay.
The Rock.
Okay, tell me more. I'm intrigued.
That Rock promo leading up to the six-way Hell in a Cell is maybe one of his best promos, in that he does an impression of everybody, including Rikishi, going, I did it for the people.
Love it. Getting back to the best thing in the world. So you can't stand top forever, obviously. Kenny starts taking some really big losses as the Bullet Club starts to really start fragmenting, or at least that version of the Bullet Club starts to fragment. And as that starts fading away, and as he starts having that separation with the Bullet Club, don't cry, Danielle, who winds up being there, ready and waiting and always willing to accept him and everything that he has done because of love? But Kota Ibushi. I can't say enough about this. Kel, go ahead and take it.
Love is forgiveness, people. Love is forgiveness. I'm two naked toddlers in a black and white cartoon holding a sign that says love is forgiveness.
just Ann Getty's it up, man.
Yeah. Like, what would you give to see Kota and Kenny do an Ann Getty's photo shoot? Just little sunflowers, as babies in sunflowers. I want it. We're going to see that on WWE.com next week, but with other wrestlers. That's what's going to happen. They'll be like, see our slideshow of wrestlers as Angeta's babies. It's so perfect. It's perfect how he shows up backstage and Kenny pushes him away and the Bucks get involved. And the Bucks are like, leave it alone, Kota. And then the next time where he jumps in the ring and he's there to defend Kenny and save him, and Kenny pushes him away because Kenny knows he's not worthy. Kenny believes he's not worthy. Not true. Kenny believes he is no longer worthy of Kota Ibushi's love and admiration. He has to push him away, because to accept it means accepting everything he has done, everything he has become, every terrible thing he has done to the man that has loved him, supported him, and realistically brought him to where he is that day. If he had never messaged Kota, if they hadn't had that match, the rest of it never would have happened. To accept his support in that moment means accepting everything that he has ever done and become, and it is so, that is a hard thing to do. So I'm in therapy.
It's like you said,
difficult.
It's hard. It's like John said, it's actually taking accountability and taking responsibility in that moment, which
accepting
is
accepting that you are worthy of love is hard, and it's hard for Kenny in that moment.
It's hard for Kenny in that moment, and one thing that really is at the core of a lot of wrestling stories that I wish they would explore more, but maybe not with words, is the idea of, like, accepting what you have done and accepting what you've done wrong and taking accountability for your own actions, instead of just being like, yeah, I did it for The Rock. accepting what you did and accepting what you did wrong. So that moment. And again, you can go back. We'll put a link to the episode when it happened, because we did talk for a long time. Just such a long time about that reunion. But it is classic, destined to be, buds forever, all that stuff. Hal, my love.
Yeah.
What did you think about our beautiful boys getting back together?
That's a great storytelling moment. I like well-told stories. This is one for me. I don't have the same personal 10 years worth of investment in it, so I'm more removed. It doesn't, but yeah. I appreciate it, and it has impact because it's so well done. I just look at it and like Mr. Kincaid and Partridge Family, where I'm like giving it the nod of like, yeah, that's right, good stuff.
He knows what good
RJ
is good.
RJ City is not here this week, Hal. Okay, just like wind it back in.
You know what? He's always in my heart. How about that? Never
he's always in all of our hearts.
He's always in all of our hearts. John, what was your thought when you saw that moment?
Oh man. I think you know, Lindsay, you were talking about like the wordless potential of wrestling storytelling, and to me there's one shot that really sums it up, and it's when it's like they do a cutaway and it's a long shot of Kota standing in the center of the ring reaching down and Kenny on the ground crying.
Yes.
And like, yes. What's lovely, what's so beautiful about that, it's that entire storyline in one shot. And I think, you know, like honestly, there's a few things that will like make me cry on command. Like it's Vegeta sacrificing himself against Majin Buu, it's episode 65 of Yu Yu Hakusho, and it's this, and I love it, and I still love it, and it's wrestling's really silly. Wrestling's really, really silly. I think we've made that pretty apparent in this episode. But like at its best, like this, it's fucking incredible storytelling. And if Golden Lovers is the best storyline I ever see in wrestling, I will be satisfied with that. I think it might be, you know? And I love it so much that it makes me sad that I've already made a video about it, because I can't make a video about it again. But
you can 10 years from now, because it's not over.
It's not over, John. That's true.
Because they got back together. And then they were pulled apart again. They've been pulled apart again by their own ambitions and their own wants and needs and the fact they had to go off and live their own lives.
And, like, that's the beautiful thing as well, because you know, like, there has to be some long-term plan in Gato's notebook where it's Omega versus Ibushi at the finals of Wrestle Kingdom. And, like, there is so much they can do with that. And I can't.
It's not done. It's Casablanca. Kenny got on the plane. Kenny got on the plane because he had to get on the plane. That's fine, but that plane's going to land and there are other planes.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not over. That's what I love so much about it is I don't know if it will ever be over. Will it ever be over?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, no, it won't, because again, like you said, this is exactly right. Because even after, you know, when Kenny left, because they were doing all this AEW stuff and because they were really starting to lean into this, you know, Kota's still getting questions about Kenny. And he had that one interview where obviously there's one translation, which I don't think is the right one, where someone asks him about Kenny and he goes, "I don't think about him anymore." And then there's one translation where I think is correct, where someone asks him about Kenny and he goes, "I can't think about him right now."
Yeah.
And that, like, tears.
Yeah. Lindsay's romance writer heart only wants to acknowledge one of those translations. There is a video, there was a package done of them when they reunited as Golden Lovers, and it showed, I'm sure everyone's seen this, but they're training together and they're talking to each other at the side of the ring, and they're being interviewed. And the joy in their faces of working together, of being reunited, and they're sort of like just playing with, you know, pushing each other a little bit and just be like, so that was a good training session. They're like, yeah, it was a good training session. But it's everything they're not saying is what is so powerful and so good, and that's what makes me believe this is not done, because the love that they have to work together, and that's what's so powerful about their storyline.
Even you talk about that interview and like the translation you don't want, that's actually the only translation that I had heard that I'm not thinking about Kenny right now, but to me the way I guess I interpreted that was that's what Kota is telling himself. You know.
Okay, I might be on board. Oh, you made Lindsay. Lindsay is going under her desk. She's going to bed. Look at her.
But that's the greatest romance. The greatest will they, won't they? The greatest Romeo and Juliet. It's like what brings them together is what also pulls them apart. So can they ever truly be together? Can they ever truly be apart? This is.
If you kind of like, if I think about it from Kota at this point, like. In kayfabe, in storyline, I think you can kind of say that the last year for Kota has been kind of summed up by failure, And you've seen these cracks in Coda where he's becoming like darker and darker and darker. And
yeah,
I think, what does that mean for him and Kenny? And like, there's so much they could do with that as well. I hope Kota Ibushi doesn't run over Kenny in a car. I hope that doesn't happen. but I still think, yeah, it's.
I did it for Daryl.
He'd be doing it for The Rock, oddly enough.
We'd also be doing it for The Rock. All right. If not, look, we're literally just going to sit here. If I don't make us stop doing this, we're going to do this until me and Lindsay are crying underneath our desks. So if you have any thoughts on what we've discussed, connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Discord via the links in our show notes. We'll be back after this with some things from the wrestling world that you should know about. This is Tights and Fights.
Hello, Internet. I'm your husband host, Travis McElroy.
And I'm your wife host, Teresa McElroy.
And together we present Schmanners.
It's extraordinary etiquette.
For ordinary occasions.
We explain the historical significance of everyday etiquette topics, then answer your questions relating to modern life.
So join us weekly on MaximumFun.org or wherever podcasts are found.
No RSVP required.
Check out Schmanners.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
Tights and Fights Podcast. Tights and Fights.
Welcome back to Tights and Fights. I'm Danielle Radford, and I'm joined today by
Hal Loveland,
Lindsay Kelk,
John Walsh.
Sweet. This week we want to end the show by sharing some of the joy of pro wrestling with you. This is the Three Count. So first off, we're going to start. We normally start with guests first, but today I'm a dick. And so we're going to go ahead and first, no. Today we are going to start with Mr. Hal Loveland. Hal Loveland, he never gets to go first.
I don't ever go to first. This now is a, you're this first. This is very exciting for me. I even after all of the harsh words that we had for AEW, I would like to put over my golden boy, MJF, and his tour of his campaign headquarters in advance of his match against Jon Moxley at All Out. What a great dick.
Nina, how are we looking in the polls?
We're currently...
Nina, smile or don't talk at all, honey.
We're currently leading in the polls, sir.
Epic. Now... Right now, I'm sure other people would be taking a victory lap, but not me. Just because Tony Khan authorized my match for the AEW World title at All Out doesn't mean we slow down. This campaign is not over until that title is around my waist. Why, people?
Because we deserve better.
Yes, we do.
But what if Darby wins tonight?
Oh, the 125-pound emo kid? What if he wins? Yeah, that would suck to have to wrestle him for the world title.
I mentioned that I'm working on a video on wrestling heels. I have an entire section cut out about MJF. And what a thoroughly dislikable, amazing young man.
He's like, for how young he is, it's like somebody saying, I'm going to be a diver, then training for a little bit. And the first time they get out on a live meet, they do the most complex dive possible. Every trick a veteran diver would know, and then enters the water zero splash. Yeah. It's incredible to me. His instincts and his ability on the microphone are incredible, including just from a performance perspective.
Yeah.
He's a good actor, and he knows how to work, whether there's a crowd there or whether he's in a small room, just finding levels. And it's breathtaking.
Yeah, very good. It makes me very happy. I agree. We should just call this Hal Loveland's MJF Corner. And I would actually be okay with it. That's not even me being a dick. I would be super okay with that. Lindsay, what would you like to put over?
I would like to put over a women's wrestling match that lasted more than 3 minutes and was fantastic. It was Rhea Ripley, Dakota Kai opening NXT. Mm. And it was so good. It was so brilliant. Both of those women are magnificent. It told multiple stories in one match. Everyone looked great. I have all the time in the world. How good is Dakota Kai at selling? How good is she at selling
everything that occurs? So much. And she was never bad, but like the way she's developed in the last couple of years, she's fantastic. I can't wait to see what she ends up doing.
Her heel turn is like the greatest thing that's ever happened to her. Yeah. Greatest thing. Mm-hmm. Great.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no. She, like, we've talked about this before. Like, she saw that there, she's one of those wrestlers who saw that there was a deficit and, like, worked on it. And you can see, like, the work that was done. And it makes me really happy and stuff. All right. So I am putting over Orange Cassidy on AEW, which was really, really fun and something I really, really enjoyed. We will play a clip here. When you can get that dude talking, that's another one of those things where it's like, I think he gets a lot of criticism from people who are boring about the fact that, yeah, like he wrestles like he is asleep and he doesn't do a lot of the promo-y stuff. But when he actually does the things that you, like, he's kind of better at it than most other people. The reason why it works is because he's so good at those things that he knows how to kind of work around them.
I don't understand people who don't understand Orange Cassidy. Like, like my favorite moments of his, everything he's done is coming into, I think it was the Casino Royale ladder match, and just kind of sauntering over to the announce table and asking how a ladder match works.
Right?
Yeah. Like, he was just poking the ladder with his foot. Like, he was just like kicking at it a little bit. Like, maybe just kicking the ladder would be enough. How can you not get him? Like, you watch wrestling, people. How can you not understand that it's wrestling? It's the purest form of sports entertainment, for fuck's sake.
If you can believe an Irish whip, you can believe Orange Cassidy.
My God. Thank you. But yeah, so that was great. Like, just him. That's the way you do it. That's the way you bake. Come on. It's amazing. And then we are going to round this out with our headliner, with our guest, John. What would you like to put over?
Thank you, Danielle. I'm actually kind of amazed we didn't get some Golden Lovers fan fiction from you.
I mean, I should have looked it up beforehand is what I should have done.
Okay, so I have two things I want to put over. The first I want to put over at Showbuckle on Twitter. Showbuckle was a guy who used to do a lot of New Japan video essays. He did a really good one on Okada and Tanahashi. He did a really good one on like the Bullet Club and all these different things. And he did a really great one on the Golden Lovers, which was just like maybe 18 minutes on the Golden Lovers, and it was really thorough. And I just want to bring him up because his work had a massive amount of influence on me. He was an incredible storyteller and an amazing editor, which is so rare to get someone on YouTube who can do both those things. Unfortunately, New Japan actually shut down his YouTube account and he's stopped making videos, which is a shame because he was fucking incredible. But if people just even want to go tell him he's awesome, because wrestling video essays are some of my favorite content to make, and I wouldn't know how to do it without him. So genuinely, people should give that guy props. And then the second thing I just want to put over is on the subject of MJF, Kenny's pseudo documentary on MJF is a real treat if you haven't seen it. It's something that really beautifully blurs the lines of reality with wrestling, where you're kind of like, okay, this is not what I expected. Have you guys seen that?
Not yet.
Okay.
No. I'll go check it out. Oh, Hal lit up like fucking Christmas.
Oh, yeah. It's
my eyes are as big as plates.
Really great YouTuber who does these documentaries on indie wrestlers, and they're always very poignant looks about who this person is. And he did one on Orange Cassidy. He's doing one on a bunch of different people. But his one on MJF is MJF in character the entire time trying to convince Kenny Logan that he's this person he actually isn't. And it's so weird and it's so strange. It kind of lifts the curtain a little more than I'd like towards the end, but it is just a very interesting, it is that interesting twilight where wrestling is kind of real and not real at the same time. So yeah.
Oh, that's dope. I will be sure to check that out. And that does it for this week's episode of Tights and Fights. This week, your hosts were Hal Loveland and Lindsay Kelk, along with me, Danielle Radford, John Walsh. Thank you so much for joining
guys,
us.
Oh, guys, it's always such a pleasure, really. I have such a blast doing these.
Oh, and thank you. And where can the people find you? Where can they find your stuff? What are you working on? Tell us everything. Give me the hot goss.
You can find me Super Eyepatch Wolf on YouTube. I currently have 2 video essays, one on long-term wrestling storytelling. The other, it's just called Wrestling is Dumb and Beautiful and I Love It, and that's the one with the Golden Lovers storyline. I'm currently working on a video called Villains in Wrestling, The Art of Making People Hate You, and that should be coming out in the next, I'd say 2 weeks maybe, and that's been a lot of fun.
Ooh, make sure to check that out. Anybody else have anything coming up they want the audience to know about? Lindsay Cook, book.
I have books. Please read them. Please, in case you missed it.
It's out now. In the UK. When is it coming out in the US?
In a month. It will be out in a month. USA and Canada get it September 8th. And I think Australia right now. I think right this very second. So, yeah, it's out and about. It's doing the rounds.
My birthday is like right before that, so you should give me Lindsay's book. Hal, what do you got going on? You always have something.
There's a live Welcome to Night Vale show coming up in a couple weeks.
Oh, yeah, there is.
And I will be performing in that, reprising the Steve Carlsberg bit from Librarians, which I think toured, I want to say 2015. I don't even know if that's right. 2016, something like that. Mm-hmm. But that will be available in streaming. And also, Dragon Con is happening virtually, and I'll be on a bunch of different panels for that. So check it out. Go to dragoncon.org, I think, has the information there. But it's going to be a completely virtual convention, completely safe, but without all the sweaty people dressed as Sean Connery as I does that you normally get. Don't. Sorry, Dragon Con attendees. I miss them too.
Hey, man, look, I am very happy to not have to avoid any of your fucking backpacks, although I do miss cons. Keep watching Honest Trailers because I make them. The last episode of the Raid Debate that we did for season one did air on Thursday night, so go check that out. I am doing a virtual con too next month. I'm not sure exactly what date we're going to be doing it. I think it's the 19th, but I'm going to be doing a virtual panel for PAX. So check that out, and I'll have more information as that comes. Alrighty, so those are all of our things. Our producer, Julian Burrell, thanks all of the new Max Fun members for all their love and support. We do as well. Senior producer at Maximum Fun is Laura Swisher. Mike Eagle is the voice behind our theme music. We are putting him over for that. Keep up with us all week long on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Links to all of those are in the show notes. And if you love what we do, remember to give us those 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. Share us with your friends. Share us with all your buds. And again, thank you guys so much to all of you Max Fun members who make this show possible. We could not do this without you. Oh, buy our shirt if you like our thing. We have a shirt. Put your money on it. And we will be back next week for more, you guessed it, wrestling.
Ties and Bites Podcast. Ties and Bites.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hey, so to everyone who listens, we want to thank you guys so much for being part of the show's community. If you've taken the step to join us as a Max Fund member, thank you so much for making this possible. We don't have our own producer. Julian produces us. So this is something that comes directly from the network. And so it really does, your support really does mean that we can do the show. We are really, really grateful for all of the ways that you all have chosen to support, whether it's monetary or otherwise. Like, seriously, sincerely, thank you for making this a good drive. Thank you for sticking with us right now. And hopefully, you know, me talking nasties about wrestling helped you, maybe, or someone. Didn't help me.
Yeah, this is my other Max Fun show. It was the second one that I took on, and it was an easy decision to do more stuff and to request to do more stuff within the network because of the community around it. That is, without a doubt, the absolute best part of Maximum Fun is the community of loyal listeners who support the artists who make the shows that they love. So thank you on behalf of myself, not only as an emissary of Tights and Fights, but as an emissary of We Got This with Mark and Hal. I doubly appreciate the support for both shows.
What does winning look like to Cody? Like, I want to sit down with him in the boardroom and be like, so, Cody, what does winning look like to you? Like, in his 5-year appraisal with HR, it's like, what's a 5-year plan? What does winning look like to you? Because it doesn't exist.
I genuinely think he'd be like, when Vince says he's sorry.
Yeah, exactly. And he never will.
He never will. He's going to die before he says sorry to anyone.
And that's why it's super fucked up, because that's why he's the same as Vince. So why play?
He's like, I'm gonna make Vince dress up as Stardust.
Right, exactly. It's so fucking crazy.
Vince is never gonna join the Kiss My Ass Club or whatever the exactly that is.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.